Good morning, everybody.
We interrupt this alert for another alert.
It's a Central States special report.
Welcome to another edition of Ounces of Information by Central States Beverage Company. I am your host, Aaron Robinson, and this is a special edition of Ounces of Information. Obviously, we just had an episode, and if you've been following along on this podcast for the months that we've been doing it, we usually try and do at least an episode every single month. But we realized that the beer market in Kansas City is just too big to do that. We got so much stuff coming in. We got so much stuff to talk about. So every now and then, we got to drop something like this. You may have noticed recently a series of new IPAs on the trucks. Hop Valley Brewing Company sending their fine stuff out of the state of Oregon. We joke in this discussion, it's kind of like an Oregon Trail in reverse, but I realize that's kind of a segmented joke. Either way, if you get it, you get it. I sat down over Discord and had a conversation with Brandon Ross, the chain manager over at Hop Valley Brewing Company, and this particular conversation is the result of that. If you've not yet had a chance to get some Hop Valley Brewing Company, either Bubble Stash IPA or the Stash Pack variety, I definitely recommend doing so before cracking into this episode. But either way, a lot of information goes down, such as like the groundbreaking concepts behind cryo hopping or an all IPA variety pack, and quite a few 90s references. Very excited to be distributing Hop Valley Brewing Company in Kansas City. Without further ado, Brandon Ross, Hop Valley Brewing.
There you are.
Hey, okay. I'm not sure honestly what to expect. This is my first call like this.
This is also actually the first kind of podcast recording that we've done in this nature. I know when we first started it, the goal was to do it once a month and put a focus on, you know, one supplier partner a month. But we add way too many products into the market to just focus on it just once a month. And Hop Valley, obviously in April, not really being any exception to that. We have you in market, and kind of what I was telling you beforehand, we got sales reps that are selling it, and they're like, I know I'm selling it, but I don't know an awful lot about it. So we need to do more. So we're doing more podcasts. This is like the first ever Central States edition, special edition podcast. So Hop Valley is my first in that nature.
A lot of firsts happening here. Our first time selling beer in your market. I will say I appreciate the power of your sales reps being able to sell something they don't know anything about already. So
right, very
awesome to start.
They absolutely kill it in market. I'm sure they appreciate hearing that too. Welcome, I guess I should say then, to Kansas City. And Kansas City welcomes Hop Valley Brewing Company out of Oregon. And I noticed you have two different locations, right? Springfield and Eugene.
Where I'm in Eugene right now, and I will say that our two locations, Springfield and Eugene, are only, I think it's 6 miles apart.
Oh, wow. Okay. So nothing.
It's kind of like The Simpsons. It's just our neighboring town. We kind of merge into one.
And you guys have been brewing for how long?
We, Hop Valley was founded February 13th, Friday, February 13th, 2009.
Okay. The 11-year anniversary. I guess we're past that 12? Now.
Yeah.
12. That's right. Yeah. My math is, you know.
It's cool. It's COVID. You know, it affects.
And
I still let you throw out the number before I threw it out there, because to be honest, I had uncertainty myself.
I'll take the fall. I'm happy to do so. We've got two different offerings here for Hop Valley that are currently in Kansas City. One is the Bubble Stash standalone six pack, and the other one is the Hop Valley Stash Pack variety. And I don't think I need to tell you by any stretch of the means, Brandon, that the Hop Valley Stash Pack or just variety packs in general are all the rage.
Yeah, that's a good point to bring up.
Yeah, and no better way to introduce yourself to a brewery that's new to the market than just picking up that 12-pack and seeing what multiple offerings they can provide.
All right, let's start off talking about variety packs.
Yes, Hop Valley Stash Pack. This one has four different beers. The Bubble Stash, which is also the standalone. The Cryo Stash, the Stash Panda, and the Mango Stash.
Yes. Let me just say, so, man, where do we start here? Do we want to start at the very beginning? I don't know how much time we have, but we can talk the whole story. We can go right into the brands. Let's start with the variety pack, the package that we are launching, that we have officially launched here about 2 weeks ago in Kansas City in Missouri with our Stash Pack. I got to say, I couldn't be happier with the timing that this all fell into. through COVID, through 2020, it's been a very challenging market and a very different market than the market we were in 2 years ago. And there's been some changes that have come about. Habits have been changed by the shoppers out there. And certainly one of those habits is going to the stores to purchasing their beer. So off-premise has definitely seen a huge increase. But 12 packs have grown tremendously. Consumers are buying up. They want more beer for their fridge because they're not going anywhere. So they're happy to buy up to a 12 pack. And then variety packs. Overall, variety packs have been a pretty big player in craft beer for a while now. But for the last couple of years, if you look at 2019, 2018, overall variety packs were actually down. They were declining. But focused variety packs, style-specific variety packs, such as IPA-focused variety packs, have been continuing to grow year after year, even when overall variety was down, but up even more so through COVID. So I like to talk about variety packs. We entered the variety pack a little late to the game. Our first variety pack that we launched was a bottle that we call Hot Mixer, which is still in the market here in the Pacific region. And at the time, again, we were late to the party. There was a lot of variety packs out there, but we just felt that the variety packs on the market had too much variety. You still see it, but there's always like the common variety pack. You have an IPA, some type of blonde or cream ale, a porter or stout, and then some type of fourth seasonal that kind of rotates. And it always felt like one of those four beers was a dud. One of those four beers was getting left in the fridge. And it's good to have beer left over in the fridge when you have unexpected company, of course. But at the same time, you know, are you going to repurchase that pack when you still got one of the four offerings in your fridge? So we thought we wanted to bring variety to the game, but we had a very strong IPA portfolio. And we know how important variety is for the IPA drinker. So why not have variety within IPA available in one package? That does offer true variety, right? A difference between the four beers, but it's still a focused variety pack that's offering what this IPA drinker is looking for. So when I talk about that first one, that was more of our kind of classic West Coast, Northwest style IPAs. And with Stash Pack, it's kind of the next level of that, where our target demographic for this pack is, you know, 21 to 34 IPA drinker, experimental IPA drinker, contemporary IPA drinker, someone who's willing to give a chance on something new. And we definitely wanted to have variety, but we wanted to make sure that all four of these beers would hit with that one consumer. And I think Stash Pack does that very well.
I think you hit it right on the head and kind of stole a little bit of my talking point thunder there whenever you talked about the standalone variety pack on one focus, which is in this case IPAs. Whenever you think variety pack, with what a lot of people are out there doing is sending you what you were saying, like a porter and a stout and an IPA and a pale ale or something like that. And there's an awful lot of different flavor profiles there, and some of them may not hit. And so at the end of the variety pack, you're just left with those in the fridge. But if you're an IPA fan, you're probably a fan of hoppy beers, you know, and this is across the board different varieties of IPA.
Exactly.
So yes. if you're out in the store and you don't know which one, variety pack is a good way to go, especially whenever you've got an offering of four different ones in one pack. We probably should have led with the big differentiator in the room, which is these packs and these cans and Hop Valley in general puts a major focus on cryo hops.
Yeah, you want to get right into this.
Yeah, we probably should have actually started with that one. But
well, you can edit this, right? We can just rearrange the structure of this podcast, and we can put this.
I think we're just going to Tarantino it and make this more Pulp Fiction, and we'll just see where it lands.
It's all about. I'm a fan.
Yeah.
Let me preface that by saying, yes, we are launching an IPA nationally in April of 2021. And I know I've talked to a lot of distributors here recently, and I can tell you straight up, none of them are like, hey, we need another IPA. It's probably the last thing that any market needs is another IPA for their market. And for good reason. You know, there's over 8,000 breweries in the country right now, and the vast majority of them are brewing phenomenal IPA. I mean, there is mind-blowing IPA out there. We are spoiled as consumers. And yeah, I agree. It's probably the last thing that anyone could possibly want. So we are launching an IPA, and we are considering this a new proposition to the craft category and the IPA category. I want to preface that as well by saying, you know, craft beer is still growing. I know seltzer has been the belle of the ball for the last year and a half or so, and that's on everyone's mind for good reason. But craft beer does continue to grow year after year. And the vast majority of that growth is still coming from IPA. And even more importantly, I think it's coming from the innovation within IPA. IPA is a very diverse style right now. There's dozens of subcategories that fall under IPA. And some of the big players that have really been driving growth recently is styles like Hazy IPA, that New England IPA, Imperial IPAs continue to grow year after year. So when we're launching an IPA and we're bringing our Stash series, I would love if everyone can consider this a new proposition. Consider this style of beer, this cryo hop style of beer, similar to how you would have maybe considered Hazy IPA about 3 years ago when it was first launching and going out. Because Hazy is a huge player right now. It's a 4-6 share in the country, and even higher than that in a lot of states, depending on the craft market. And it's continuing to grow. It's a style that's there. It's permanent, that didn't exist 3.5 years ago. So with cryo hops in our Stash series of beer, this is a product that can bring forward what the hazy drinkers are looking for, with increased flavor and aroma from the hops, but without the bitterness that's associated with a lot of the classic style IPAs, the West Coast IPAs. We feel that this Stash series of beer, these cryo hops, and we will get into what cryo hop is, provides flavor and aroma without the downsides that are often associated with the hazy styles that are shortened shelf life. So
it's one of the first things that I noticed.
We've got a hazy in this batch here, so I can't claim all that, but let's can we get into what a cryo hop is right now?
Yeah, I think so. That would probably be the best way.
All right. So, and you may have heard of them. Cryo hops are available to brewers everywhere now. Cryo hops were officially released February 2017. It's a proprietary hop product that's owned by a single hop farm in Yakima called Yakima Chief Hops. It's science and technology coming into the hop industry. The hop industry, by the way, hasn't had a lot of innovation over its existence, 100 plus years. The vast majority of funds that have gone into the hop industry have come from the large brewers, i.e. the Molson Coors and Anheuser-Busch's of the world, for the very reason that they're the ones purchasing the vast majority of hops. But as you may be aware, these breweries are not necessarily looking for hop flavor and aroma in hops. So the majority of research and development that's gone to the hop industry has been towards greater yields, right? More hops per acre. Disease resistance, as well as increased alpha acid. So you can use less hops and get a similar bitterness from alcohol and malt. So with the growth of craft beer in the past 10 to 15 years and hop forward styles like IPA really driving that growth, hop farmers they've become incentivized to create new varieties of hops that provide new flavors and aromas. And now with cryo hops, new ways of extracting those flavors and aromas from the hops.
Whenever it comes to like these cryo hops, and you actually may answer this here in the very near future, but you know, of all the different hop varieties like Mosaic hops, Nelson Sauvin, Citra, are these all cryo hoppable?
So technically yes, but you mentioned Nelson Sauvin because it's owned by a hop farm in Yakima, and this is not a process that's happening, say, in New Zealand, for example, or Australia. There's only cryo offerings of hop varieties that are available in the Northwest. So while you could take a Nelson Sauvin and add this process to it and create a cryo hop, you're not going to see that coming from YCH simply because they don't grow or produce Nelson Sauvin hops.
Gotcha. Okay.
So any hop can be cryotized. And I use the word cryotized loosely. That's not official terminology. It's lack of a better word, if you will.
It's better than the one I had. So.
All right. So let me explain what the process is real quick. So, sure. And frankly, you know, we do have limitations as far as regionality for hops. And you know, a lot of the folks listening to this probably are aware that hops are very regional and territorial, similar to how grapes are, you know, dependent on elevation, humidity, exposure to light, you're going to get different results. So the Northwest here, Willamette Valley in Oregon, Yakima Valley in Washington, is the number two producer of hops in the world, behind only Germany, who we're rapidly catching up to, by the way, with American IPA taking off. While we don't have those New Zealand and Australian offerings, we do have a very wealth portfolio of offerings, including the Mosaics, which you mentioned. So we are not short for options when it comes to the hops that we can use. But I digress. The process does happen at the farm, and it can happen after harvest season, and basically any time after harvest season, but typically pretty close. So they'll harvest in the fall. You know, hops are perennial. They're harvested once a year in the fall, here in the Northwest anyway. And so typical process would be they pick the hops and they dry them immediately, get any of that moisture out of there so they don't turn. And then they would either freeze dry them as a whole cone, or they would pelletize them. They put them through maceration machines that grind them up. So with cryo hops, they've added a step here. So they pick the hops, harvest them, then they dry them. But now they add a new step. They treat the hops to a nitrogen bath. They cryogenically freeze the hop cone to the point where it actually becomes brittle. The plant material becomes brittle, and they can then shatter it. They shatter like glass, this leaf material. And then they can wholly extract the lupulin gland from the hop cone. And lupulin gland is like a yellow pollen-like material that you, if you ever broke open a hop or saw a cross-section, you see this yellow pollen along the inside of the stem. That's lupulin gland. And lupulin gland is what contains all of the essential oils and alpha acids that provide flavor and aroma to beer from the essential oils, and then the bitterness as well from the alpha acids. So if you think about a hop in that sense, the cone itself is really just a delivery device of lupulin gland to the brewer's kettle. So with this process, extracting the lupulin gland, we're getting right to the essence of the hop. So we're using pure lupulin gland without the leafy plant material that comes with it, or the bract for that matter. And what that means to the consumers and for the brewers is that we're able to get flavor and aroma from the hops in a greatly enhanced scale. I usually take the comparison and I'm a 90s kid, so forgive me here, but taking the comparison of taking a VHS cassette and upscaling it to 4K ultra high definition flavor and aroma to the point where in sensory, and you know, most hops flavor and aroma is happening in sensory, you're rubbing hops and smelling them. When you take Mosaic as a good example, cryo hop version versus the pellet version, you're actually able to detect flavor and aroma from the cryo version that you can't even pick up on in the pellet counterpart. So again, greatly enhanced flavor and aroma. So that's definitely the benefit. There's another benefit that's probably less talked about and less known, that's certainly relevant with today's IPA brewers, this contemporary IPA style, which relies on very heavy dry hopping. Dry hopping is when you're putting in hops after fermentation at cold temperatures. And when you put a ton of hops in a dry hop, you get all the flavor and aroma from the hops. You're not boiling it out. But when you're putting in hops after fermentation, the plant material that comes with that hops, well, that plant material contains oxygen. All plant material does. So when you're heavily dry hopping a beer, you are adding oxygen to your beer. Because the yeast is no longer in there or done, they're not able to absorb that oxygen. So you're putting oxygen into your beer that you can never get back out, which is a big part of the reason why hazy IPA has such a shortened shelf life. And a lot of their IPAs for that matter, IPA oxidizes very quickly. Part of that is because with heavy doses of hops comes heavy doses of oxygen. So again, with cryo hops, we are able to get that increased flavor and aroma, but we're not adding additional plant material, which means we're not adding that additional oxygen as well. So with our stash series of beer and this cryo hop offerings, we actually expect an extended shelf life from them as well, which is a really cool hidden benefit. And also making it a perfect candidate, by the way, to be the next national IPA, a shelf-stable IPA that brings flavor and aroma in a huge way that's never been done before. Yeah, so a lot of cool things happening with cryo hops.
That whole process that you just brought up was actually not in any way the way that I thought it would go. And I guess to kind of like put it into like Midwest Kansas City terms, the way that I kind of thought it was that these cryo hops probably were pelletized, kind of like, you know, like a Traeger pellet for your smoker.
Yeah.
And then the scientific term would be smashed. But no, you guys literally freeze the entire, or you know, whoever does the cryo hopping literally freezes the entire cone and then smashes it.
Yeah. So good point. And pellets, hop pellets do look like, I usually use gerbil food. Traeger pellets is another perfect example. When cryo hops were first released in 2017, it was literally just a bag of powder, a green powder. And they've since, due to feedback from brewers around the country, they do have a pelletized form of the cryo hops now, which we use as well. So there is a learning curve that comes with cryo hops, especially with that powder form. The thing that's nice about pellets is they'll sink to the bottom and expand. But with the powder, it just literally floats on top of your kettle or of your fermenter. So you got to either do circs or use paddles to really get it to mix in. And let me tell another story with cryo hops, because again, you know, we don't own this product and we don't expect to, but we are heavily invested in this. And I get asked why, like, hey, why do you, I get that this point of difference, but you guys are getting behind it like no one else has. And we're very vested in this product. We truly believe this is going to be the future of craft brewing. And we've actually been involved in the creation of this process, helped inspire the creation of cryo hops. Because while I said that cryo hops were officially released in 2017, we've actually been working with the farmers since 2012. A long story that I will just briefly touch on, but Hop Union, another Northwest farmer, ended up merging with YCH, now known as Yakima Chief Hops. But back in 2011, 2012, it was Hop Union. And so the story goes that in 2012, our brewers are up in Yakima at Hop Union, and they're doing their hop selection. This is where you kind of pick through the different varieties and make your selections of hops for the next year. And while you're doing these sensory and hop selection panels, you always get a cool tour. And they were doing a tour of the hop pellet processing facility. This is where they take the hops and they turn them into pellets. And they noticed all over the maceration equipment, you know, the hop hammers and the belts, there was this sticky hash keef-like material covering everything. And this was a product that was literally a byproduct that the farm would just sweep off in between batches and discard as trash. And while our brewers were up there, they asked if anyone had ever tried brewing a beer with this hop hash before. And they indulged us. They actually scraped some off of the line and put it in a bag. And we brought it down to Eugene and brewed the very first version of Bubble Stash. The beer has evolved like the hop product has. But if you go back, I guess, almost 10 years now to that first version of Bubble Stash, it was very different. It was like unlike any beer that we'd ever had or ever brewed. It had some really cool, unique qualities, certainly like a resiny quality to it. It was light. It was floral. And that first batch was a mixture of different hop varieties. And it was literally just like, it was a mess. We had to literally physically pull out baling twine and wire out of this bag. And it was clumpy, like, or this green, golden, sticky kind of powder. You'd have to declump it. But it created a really amazing beer. And as a thank you, we sent a keg up to Yakima. They liked it too. They loved it. 2013, they sent us a Centennial variety hop hash. This was a single hop variety. It was a lot cleaner this time, but still powder, still sticky and clunky. Had to go through and break it up. And that continued year after year, all the way up until 2017. So they took the concept of this hop hash, added their spin, their science and technology, and released cryo hops to the world. So it's a cool story that we're super proud to be involved in that process. But it also gave us a really strong advantage as far as a first to market opportunity. There is a learning curve that comes with using cryo hops, and we knew exactly what to do with them. So when they released cryo hops in February, we had Bubble Stash, this version of Bubble Stash that we're launching in the market by the following month in March. So Bubble Stash, we'll just get right into that beer, unless you've got a comment or question.
No, absolutely. I think the one thing that I was just kind of going to reiterate here, just to kind of keep people up to speed on it, was it sounds like the cryo hopping process, for a more layman casual consumer term, would be that this type of process allows for the same flavors and aromas of just about any type of IPA to come through without the bitterness that also comes with most normal brewing processes of an IPA.
I agree with that statement. That is certainly with the Stash series, you know, we're bringing flavor and aroma forward from these hops in a huge way and leaving the bitterness behind. But that is not, the bitterness not being there is not a direct result of cryo hops. And that's something that is a tough message to communicate. But the lupulin gland, right, the cryo hops, the lupulin gland contains all the alpha acids that provide bitterness for beer as well. So, you know, while you can have greatly enhanced flavor and aroma, you could also have greatly enhanced bitterness using cryo hops if you so desired.
I
give the credit as far as how we're using them, and that speaks to the learning curve that comes along with this product. And I give the credit to our brewers on the way that they're using these hops. Through years and years of trial and tribulation in different batches, we found the way to unlock, I think, the full potential of these hops. And certainly the bitterness is not a quality that we were looking for from this particular offering. So while this is available everywhere and brewers are getting behind them, most brewers are using these in combination with traditional pellets or whole cone hops, and they're using them primarily as a little cherry on top, if you will, a little extra kick of flavor and aroma to help balance or bring out some of the other flavors that you're bringing with your previous edition hops.
That makes a lot of sense. But you guys, this is straight cryo hopping.
Yeah, straight cryo hopping. Yeah, and using different varieties, different blends of varieties. I'll say, so Bubble Stash, which was the first, right? It was the first commercially packaged cryo hop beer on the market, the beer that helped inspire the creation of cryo hops. The name itself does kind of play into the story of cryo hops. Bubble Stash is actually a play on Bubble Hash. This was a cannabis product. I think it was pretty popular in the 60s, 70s. Bubble Hash. So Bubble Hash was for the cannabis world, and they would take the marijuana, and they would put it in an ice bath using a series of filters, and the ice would help extract the trichomes, and you would literally filter it through to this fine bottom line, and you'd have this pure trichome keef powder from weed. And then they used that to make finger hash, which they called Bubble Hash. So we thought the process was similar. So with Bubble Stash, it is a play on that directly.
Well, and since, you know, Missouri just very recently passed medical marijuana, this is, we're professionals in the industry now. So this makes
nice.
Sense.
You guys are on the first platform. I like it.
Bubble Stash. I think there's an awful lot of people that are going to be next to the shelves and the coolers and be like, ah, I get that reference. I'm going to get this six pack now too.
Yeah. So one of our brewery friends and one of the guys that was involved with us in those early days, Gary Kingery, he is a longtime friend of the brewery, and he has an amazing mustache. And actually our first version of Bubble Stash had his face on the label and his big curly mustache. So it was kind of a play on that too. Like, we would always joke every
time. That's awesome. I like that. I like that a lot. That's also, you know, Bubble Stash, like I mentioned, is available in the six pack standalone. It's also a feature in the Stash Pack variety, along with three others, the Stash Panda, Cryo Stash, and the Mango Stash.
One more talking point just about the beer specifically with Bubble Stash, and the fact that this is a single hop beer. We are using Mosaic variety cryo hops. And Mosaic, which you mentioned, is a Northwest grown hop, and it's become, you know, a big, big player in IPA, certainly in the hazy brewers. Consumers know the brand. You know, it's a fun kind of novelty hop, and it brings some really unique qualities that you just don't see in other hop varieties. On the fruit side, you know, citrus is a commonality in Northwest grown hops. With Mosaic, you definitely lean towards that tangerine citrus, which is nice. And then you also get a very kind of distinct blueberry bush, kind of blueberry floral quality that comes with it too. So on the fruit side, but one of the things Mosaic brings that's truly unique is what we refer to as dankness. And dankness does refer to the cannabis world. And when it comes through in Bubble Stash, I recognize it as kind of a resiny quality. So when you're drinking Bubble Stash at home, you know, you're going to start off with a, you know, kind of a slightly overripe fruit characteristic that kind of lends and blends into that hop resin quality while you're drinking it. And then a very clean finish, right? Not a lot of lingering bitterness. It's not going to dry your mouth out. You're not going to get caught in mouth drinking this beer. And the idea being this is one that you could literally sit down and drink three or four of without any qualms. So I got more stories on Bubble Stash. I got one more I want to tell. Is that okay?
I don't think podcasts have time limits. So yeah, you're good.
We just lose their attention after a while, but no worries.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Very near and dear to my heart. I remember the first time I had this version of Bubble Stash in March. At the time, I was a district sales manager for Hop Valley. I was selling beer to the bars and stores, and I had a meeting at the coast, Florence, which is about 45 minutes from here. And Bubble Stash had just gone on tap, and I was bringing some out to a big bar out there, Beachcomber, for a meeting with the owner. And from the moment I drank it, I was just through the roof. Like, it was, I've had all the other versions of Bubble Stash, and I definitely appreciated them, but this version was just amazing to me. And so the whole time I'm driving, I'm on the phone. I'm calling our owners, Chuck and Jonas. I'm calling our master brewer, Trevor, Pat. I'm calling everybody I can. I go, hey, man, this beer is amazing. Like, we have to get this into a package right away. And this is 2017. And this is like the time when Hazy was really taking off. The limited releases from kind of really small breweries were at their peak. These $15 four packs that people would line up around the corner for. And I felt like this kept up with any one of those beers. And so I wanted to get in package right away, but it was a no. I got no's from everybody. This is a beer that almost never made it into package. At the time, it was the most expensive beer we'd ever brewed, which is weird. But the cryo hops, they are a premium hop product, and with that comes a premium price point. So we talk about cryo hops and the pellet counterparts. They actually cost three times as much as the pellet does. So Mosaic, oh, wow. For example. I think with our contract, we're paying around $8 a pound. We pay about $27 a pound for the cryo version of that. So when we first had Bubble Stash, it was super expensive, and we didn't want to put it on the shelf at a higher price point, right? Imperial price point, because it only was 6.2% alcohol. And we're very big on bringing value for the dollars that consumers spend. What we were able to do over a period of a couple months was really break it down. And there's some benefits that come with cryo hops on the brewing side. You know, again, we're not using the plant material from the hop. That plant material, in addition to bringing oxygen to your beer, when you dry hop with that beer, that plant material actually soaks up liquid. It soaks up beer. And so when you pull your hops out of your beer, you actually lose liquid up to a couple barrels per batch, depending on your size. But with cryo hops, we were having a better yield, more barrels per brew. And we were able to figure that out and squeeze it into where, all right, we can make this work. Let's put it out in the market for just a quick, you know, spring, early summer seasonal, a 3-month window, and see what it does. And we did that. And then within 3 weeks, we were getting calls from our entire distributor network that they were out of the beer. They wanted to get more right away. That continued month after month, year after year, even last year. A brand that's been in the market over 3 years now, almost four, I guess over four now. We were up 46% in the Pacific region with just Bubble Stash as a standalone six pack, which is a pretty big statement when you consider there's just not that much brand loyalty from craft drinkers these days. And the same thing was happening in the on-premise with Draft. You know, this was at the peak of what we kind of jokingly refer to as Rotation Nation, where you go into a bar, even if they have 40 taps, you can get a handle pretty easily. Keeping it on for more than one keg, right? They don't care how fast it sells. There's two other styles backing it up. But Bubble Stash became one of those beers that stayed on tap permanently. That was kind of the first realization that we had as a company that we're onto something here. If we can have repeat rates, you know, we still experience our most recent comps on repeat rates is 60%. So 6 out of 10 people that try a beer for the first time come back and purchase again, which is, again, mind-blowing. You just don't see that. Even seltzer doesn't hit those numbers in some cases. So the point of difference, it's cry out point of difference. We knew we were onto something.
Good call to can it, sir.
Yeah, I know, man. It's crazy to think it almost never happened. And, you know, within 3 months, we were pivoting as a brewery. And by the end of that year, we had shifted our focus on how we go to market on everything. And it's what ultimately led to the rest of the Stash series that we're going to get into next.
Well, I think you actually had a really interesting point I want to spotlight there really quick too, in that cryo hops are a premium ingredient, and that was kind of what was driving the cost. These days, it's just almost a constant hurdle to kind of remind and to reiterate to the consumer that price points aren't necessarily or always centered around ABV. And that's not always, you know, the reason that you're paying more. It's if that's what you're in for, that's great. And there's plenty of beer out there for you, but ingredients more and more are getting louder and louder. And people genuinely, this has kind of been a recurring talking point too, people genuinely care what they're putting into their body.
Yeah.
So if you want those primo ingredients, it does, you know, like you said, it costs a little bit more.
Yeah, it's a good point. You know, hops are expensive. And then the versions that are being brewed today, while they have less bitterness, they have more hops than have ever been added to beer in the past. And I think it's a good thing. You know, it's opening up and we're in the Willamette Valley. The name of our brewery, Hop Valley, you know, we have two brewing locations here in the Willamette Valley. Both locations, oddly enough, used to be hop farms. That's just how big the hop farming community and culture is out here. So I'm supportive of it. It's one of the main four ingredients in beer. And I love to see all the progression and progress that's coming thanks to the result of IPAs. And, you know, consumers are hooked on IPA. It just continues to grow, and I love it. And, yeah. And I think of our Stash series is kind of like an IPA with training wheels, right? You know, I run into people all the time that don't like IPA. And this is one of my favorite things, doing live samplings, even to this day. Oh, I don't like IPA. But then they try a beer and they love it, right? And, oh, finally an IPA I like. And it makes sense, you know, like, and I think this is my theory on why IPA continues to grow. Like, the bitterness in beer, it's a natural human instinct to reject bitterness. That's like nature's way of telling us that this isn't ready, this isn't ripe, don't eat this. So bitterness is like a natural human instinct to reject. Similar to spicy food, you know, like jalapenos, they, you know, nature's way of saying, don't eat this, it's going to burn your mouth. You know, you can build up a tolerance. I know the first time I had a jalapeno, I was a kid, and I remember it, man. It was so hot. It was so hot, it burned my mouth. I couldn't taste anything. I was screaming and dying for moments. And then I fast forward in life as I've built the tolerance to spice or Scoville's. Now there's certain dishes that I can't eat without having a spice element. It feels like something's missing. And I think the same thing happens in the beer world. I think my first IPA, I hated it. I know it was getting popular and my buddies were all drinking IPA. And I remember the first one I tried, I was like, ugh, this gives me cotton mouth. Like, I don't like it. Is that like the cotton mouth? If I drink more, does it go away? So I try that. Nope, just gets worse. But then I started drinking a pale ale that had a little bit of hop and not too much bitterness. And I drank that pretty regularly for a couple months. And then all of a sudden I could go back to this IPA that wrecked me and it didn't wreck me anymore. I was like, oh, I get it. And so just like spicy in food where it now counteracts with other ingredients, the same thing happens with beer, right? The bitterness plays a role in flavor and aroma with beer. Like, it'll actually balance out sweetness in beer. When you do get that acquired taste and now you're drinking hoppy beers, and you try to go back to something that doesn't have that, you feel like something's missing. You're not getting the full experience. So I think that's part of the reason why IPA continues to grow. And when we talk about our Stash series of beer, while we're not bringing that bitterness, we feel that we are definitely there for this new age contemporary IPA drinker, this new breed of drinker, by the way. There's an IPA drinker in the world now that doesn't like IPA, unless it says hazy on it. And I think that is a direct result of the bitterness, the lack of bitterness that comes from the hazy style. So while our beers aren't providing the bitterness, we are showcasing flavor and aroma. So making it a very good entry-level IPA for those folks that are sensitive to bitterness, that can definitely learn to appreciate bitterness as they continue to drink them.
When you're looking at these cans, each one in the variety pack, you know, there's at least three things that are really front and center. And, you know, the first one's the design. All of them are beautiful. The second one is the cryo hops, which we've obviously spotlighted for obvious reasons, but it's very much there. It very much lets you know that these are cryo hopped beers. But the third one is, it's a little bit more subtle, but I definitely wanted to point it out because we talk about bitterness and the measuring scale here in this country, the International Bitterness Units, the IBUs. I did do some research prior to this and I Googled it. And I think the average IPA these days is going around 60 to 80 IBUs. Bubble Stash, 45 IBUs. Stash Panda, 50 IBUs. Mango Stash, 30 IBUs. And then I think Cryo was around 50 as well. Like, this is below that bitterness. So you're talking about cutting that bitterness and introducing the new drinker to the cryo hopped style. And it's very approachable.
We got time. So I'm just gonna everything that pops into my head, I'm just gonna say it. So talking about bitterness, it is the scale that we use. But it is a flawed scale. And you know, it's a good starting off point. But really it's about perceived bitterness in beer. And I'll use an example. So you could take like, you know, a Northwest or West Coast IPA, a malty one that's 80 IBUs. And that's going to have a certain level of perceived bitterness when you drink it. But if you were to take like a Pilsner or a Blonde Ale or a Hef and have the same amount of IBUs as that malty IPA, it would taste a lot more bitter to you simply because there's not the balancing happening from the malt and higher alcohol. I say that to say that, you know, IBUs is the starting off point, but it's not the end story. And, you know, 40 to 50 IBUs that we have in our Stash series, that's still a lot higher than pale ales. But I think that most of these beers really drink like a pale ale. And I think a typical pale ale probably falls in that 25 to 30 IBUs. But it's all about how that bitterness is balanced and perceived while you're drinking it. So it's a very important aspect of beer. I refer to it as the honey roasted peanut effect. Bitterness in beer will cancel out and balance out sweetness from either higher alcohol over 7.5% or malt sweetness. It's very similar to how salt interacts with sugar in food, which is why I call it the honey roasted peanut effect. You have a salted peanut and they taste great, but then your palate gets tired, right? You get that salt burn. Or you could have just a straight sweet peanut, which tastes great as well, but then it becomes rich or cloying. And then there's the honey roasted peanut, the balance between salt and sweet. And it creates an irresistible treat that you just can't put down. Sorry. And you see, we look for similar balance in beer. The IBUs that we are bringing are a lot lower than traditional IPA is, but they do still play a very important role as far as balance goes. I just wanted to bring reference to that because, you know, 45 IBUs in Bubble Stash, I still think that beer drinks like an easygoing pale ale. I would compare it to a lot of other pale ales that are in that 25 to 30 IBU range as far as how the bitterness is perceived on your palate. This is a very easy drinking beer.
Moving forward in the variety pack, do we want to kind of start to break this past Bubble Stash now? And
yeah,
now that we want to start with. Yeah, no. In my mind, I would probably gravitate towards the Stash Panda next.
All right. Just to throw you off, let's do the Mango and Stash next.
That's fine.
So Mango and Stash, it was the next beer chronologically that we released in these four. This beer, so Mango and Stash, this was actually part of a draft-only series that we had that we called Hop Force One, where we match a single hop and a single fruit. And the inspiration for Mango and Stash actually came from our favorite 80s cop buddy movie, Tango and Cash. We love movies around here. So Tango and Cash, you know, it was kind of a big premise in the 80s and early 90s where you take the bad boy, the bad boy of the cop world, you know, he's getting in the paper, he's blowing shit up and causing all damage, but he gets it done. And you partner him with the goody two-shoe do-gooder, perfect example of what an officer should be. You partner him up, you put him in the same car, hilarity ensues, and they kick ass together. So similar concept here with Mango and Stash. We we thought, what would happen if we took the bad boy of the hop world with Mosaic Cryo Hops, the same hop we're using in Bubble, and partnered it with the always fun-loving mango puree. So yeah, single hop, single fruit in this one. This is a beer we're using real actual mango puree that's being processed for us by a company in Salem, Oregon, Oregon Fruit Products. And we're not using any type of extract or essence with this, which is, I think, an important talking point. And this is also another beer, by the way, that just started its life out as a limited seasonal for us. We thought this was going to be a summery beer that wouldn't maybe hold up through the colder months, but turns out we were wrong. People started calling us right away and saying this was their favorite beer ever and wanted to get more. And this is probably a story that's not necessary for you, but the stash pack that we're launching here in the Northwest, in the Northwest and the Pacific region, we actually have three constants and one rotating beer in that series. And it speaks to the power of variety, right? But for us, it became a very important tool as a way to test a beer. We've got test markets in the on-premise bars through our pubs of getting feedback from consumers. So going into the stash pack as the mystery beer, the rotator was our next level of, does this work at retail? And so Mango and Stash started its life there. It went in as a 3-month seasonal. And like I mentioned, we were getting calls all over. And it's become one of the fan favorites out here. And it makes sense. I mean, mango in beer is absolutely on fire right now. Mango and alcohol in general, even like every market you look at, every channel and every market that you look at, there is a mango player. Mango White Claw, perfect example, Truly Mango. So we realized, you know, as people were responding and reaching out to us about this beer that, you know, mango's on fire and we need to make it more available. So it's now year round in our stash pack as part of our national package. But there are some pointed differences from those other brands that I mentioned. And, you know, I think the fact that we aren't using any type of extract, we are using real fruit that does go through fermentation, which means, you know, the sugars are fermented out. So you're not getting that overly sweet or what I refer to as Bath and Body Works like essence of mango, like an mango spray. You're not going to get that. You will get what I refer to as a slightly underripe mango characteristic. The story with this beer for me is just how well it really does work with the Mosaic Cryo Hops. And when I'm drinking this beer, even today, years later, I'm always kind of challenging myself as to try to determine where is the mango playing in flavor and aroma, where are the hops playing in flavor and aroma, and they work so well together. That's the thing that keeps me coming back. And I think, again, the timing, we're grateful for the timing behind this launch for us, because while everyone's out there getting drunk on White Claw for good reason, we do see, you know, trends. We see trends in cider, we see trends in wine, we see trends in beer. And one of these trends is that consumers tend to go drier over time. They're going to start off with something lighter and sweeter. And then as their palates develop, they do tend to go drier over time. So we feel that we are in fortune when it comes to timing to be that next offering for folks that either want to come back to IPA or want to get mango in a new way other than they've been experiencing it. Mango and Stash is here to catch them. And so, you know, we don't use extracts in any of our beers, and I'm not opposed to them. They sample very well. Definitely, you know, when you use an extract, you're delivering as advertised right off the bat. But one of the things that I experience when I drink beers or seltzers or anything for that matter with extracts is that you have a constant flavor from the extract. The extract is very powerful. You smell it, you taste it, it's in your finish when you stop drinking. While that's good and as advertised, it can create palate fatigue. When you have that one constant flavor, it's something you can tire of. You know, if you got like, and I'm not going to call out any brewers, but if you took like a Hefeweizen and put a bunch of mango extract on there, and you sample at a store or at a bar, people are going to love it. Like, holy shit, it's just like mango. It's like it should be. But when you go to sit down and drink 2 or 3 pints, you're going to get tired of that beer pretty quickly. And so I think one of the advantages to having a drier offering that is balanced with the hops very well is that this is a beer that you can drink 3, 4, 5, or 6 of day after day and not really get tired, because it does have complexity and it does have changes and differences between the aroma that you smell and the flavor that you taste while you're drinking it, and then the finish as well.
No, I'm really glad that you actually called out a lot of the other offerings that are using mango right now, because in my preparation for this last night, when I was going through this variety pack myself, coming across Mango and Stash, mango for me in beer and beverages is a lot like Dave Matthews Band. Like, there can be too much mango or there can be not enough mango. There really isn't an in between in the fan base there, you know? But this literally is in the middle of the road.
Yeah. That's a funny comparison. And I run into that too. You know, I get a lot of people like, yeah, I don't do fruit in my beer, man. Thank you very much. But no, thank you. But you know, it's not an overly fruity beer. And we definitely need to call it out because it's a big player as far as where this beer is kind of bringing you. But it's still, you know, it's still an IPA. It's still a cryo hop beer. It's still very much a Hop Valley offering that brings balance. And you're not going to get kind of worn out. Yes, thank you. By the overwhelming constant flavor. And I'll say too, you know, with extracts and mango in particular, there's a lot of companies that make extracts and they're all different. There's all subtle differences. And very much for me, I can almost taste it now. When I try certain brands that are using extracts, I can tell what type of extract they're using just based on the mango flavor profile that's coming forward. And like some of them to me are like very rindy. You get like this kind of mango peel or mango rind quality. And then some of them are very much that Bath and Body Works, like a lot of sweetness that comes with it. And but again, constant flavors. Proud to be using real fruit. And we use a ton of mango, by the way. We use 11 pounds per barrel.
That's a lot. Subtly reminding me in the back of my mind here that I have got to, wife reminds me, I got to stop by Bath and Body Works on the way home because there's a sale. Make sure you get some mango stash along the way too. But let's transcend over to Stash Panda.
All right. This is the one I'm drinking, by the way. This has been, my go-to lately. This is the newest member to the Stash family. This is a new beer for us. We released it a little less than a year ago, in May of 2020, right? So a couple things going against you right off the bat there. The fact that it was May, we're a little late for spring and we're a little early for fall. So we didn't get all the spring sets right off the bat. So we had limitations there. Launching a new brand, by the way, during 2020 is a challenge in itself when you don't have your traditional kind of tried and true sampling methods that drive velocity. So we had to just kind of throw it on the shelf and see what happens. And then another thing with this beer, so Stash Panda, this is our hazy IPA of the Stash family. And this is actually the first and only hazy IPA that we've ever released as a brewery. I say that for me, it's a big deal because if we were having this conversation 2 years ago, you'd be asking me, why don't you guys have a hazy IPA? And I'd be telling you that we have no intention of ever doing one. Simply because we feel that our Stash series is providing what today's hazy drinkers are looking for, right? Not that we don't love the style. We've always appreciated the style. It's been on my radar for a while now. But we, you know, Hop Valley, Trevor, very sensitive to, he doesn't ever want to feel like a bandwagon brewery. He's not about what's driving the bus, what's popular, and let's do our version of it. He hates doing that. In fact, if there's a brewery in town that's using coffee in their beer, we're just not going to have a coffee beer. And we don't to this day. Huh. We never did the black IPA. We've never done the brewed IPA. And it was a similar story with Hazy. Like, while we loved it, we just had no intention of jumping on the bandwagon and doing it. That said, Hazy has definitely established itself as a player. And I think the thing that Hazy IPA has done better than any other craft beer is really open up the door to this new world of drinker, the drinker I mentioned before, the drinker that loves IPA but hates IPA at the same time. And this, it's a finicky bunch, right? This new contemporary hazy drinker, they've been burned and they're not going to try your beer if it doesn't say hazy on the can. And again, while we thought a beer like Bubble Stash was kind of providing what they're looking for, we weren't getting trial from that customer simply because it didn't say hazy on the can. So it was the perfect excuse to finally get on to what we recognize fully as an established style that's not going anywhere, and then also have a vehicle to help open the door to this fastly growing consumer that's out there. So that's where Stash Panda, the concept, came from with that one. There's also another story behind the concept on this beer. I told you after 2017, we kind of shifted the focus and how we brew beer and how we approach beer. At that time, we had some pretty big players, which are still pretty big players in the Northwest, by the way. Citrus Mistress being one of our kind of early winners, bronze medal winner at the World Beer Cup. It was still traditional West Coast Northwest IPA, but we had a grapefruit peel. We're using Citra hops. It was bringing grapefruit peel in kind of a big way. But now with today's offerings, you know, and hop varieties that are available, we try that beer now, you don't get nearly as much citrus as some of the other offerings you can get. But anyway, I'm digressing. I apologize there. With Stash Panda, the other part of this was when we approached the brewers, we said, hey, what would citrus mishes look like today? If we brewed it today, are we using the techniques we're using cryo hops, how would that beer turn out? And so Stash Panda is inspiration from another brand that we have in our portfolio, our Stash version, hazy version of Citrus Mistress. And it does bring in a lot of the kind of the fun things that are happening in the craft world into one can. It is a true 100% true hazy New England style IPA. We're using an English yeast, London Fog, and English yeast is definitely a player in the traditional New England IPA, in the fact that it's an English yeast. So, you know, it doesn't attenuate fully, which means you get a little bit more residual sugar from using this yeast. One of the other qualities that really stands out with English yeast is that it provides esters. And with this variety, it provides orange marmalade-like esters. So kind of brings a nice orange marmalade mix to the party. We're using actual grapefruit peel in this beer as well. So we definitely put grapefruit peel. We're using Rio Star variety grapefruit peels. Which are in the family of ruby red grapefruits, and they come out of Texas. And we chose that grapefruit peel just because of how well it plays with the Citra variety cryo hops that we're using in this as well. So you take those kind of three strong citrus ingredients and put them together. You have kind of a citrus fruit basket in a can. It's hazy, it's crazy, it's definitely easy drinking, nice, easy balance from start to finish. And it's absolutely taken off. I referenced the challenge of launching a brand mid-year in 2020, but we're glad that we did. Despite those setbacks and challenges, Stash Panda, when we launched it in a six-pack, became the number one velocity six-pack that we've ever released as a brewery to date, which is a statement for us. So at the end of 2020, no shit, new numbers here. It was the number one new hazy IPA released in the entire Pacific region, the whole West Coast region.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it even hit like national scale. I think it was like the number six new hazy IPA in the entire country, just based on sales, primarily.
I think
here.
That speaks for itself.
Yeah. So we released this beer also at the exact same time that we were having our discussions about our national launch that was coming nearly a year later. And just based on that instant reaction, instant success, we knew we wanted to include this with our national launch. So we did add it to our Stash Pack. It is a permanent rider in there. And super, super pumped to have this included in our Stash Pack as we go launch national.
Yeah, man.
And definitely, you know, a good door opener, a good conversation piece, that entry into the hazy drinker and showing that drinker who we are as a brewery, Hop Valley, how we approach beers, and also introduce them to the rest of our Stash series that we feel that we're very happy with.
Kansas City definitely appreciates it in the inclusion of the Stash Pack. But
I get that a lot, by the way. A lot of people pick this one out as their favorite. I love it.
The Stash Panda. It is very, very good. It is. I think that one probably was blown through the quickest of my pack. So I also appreciate it. But Bubble Stash, close second. Very, very good. Let's talk about the last one, though. The Cryo Stash, the Imperial IPA.
Can I give you one more story on Stash Panda?
Absolutely.
I got to touch on the name. I actually named this beer, so I'm proud of it. Naming a beer these days is hard. It's actually become one of the hardest parts of the entire brewing process. I'm not going to lie. With over 8,000 breweries all brewing multiple hundreds of beers a year in some cases. Every name's taken, right? You got to go through TTB. So the name with this one, Stash Panda, this one we're having fun with. And, you know, Stash Panda is a play on Trash Panda, a trash panda. You may know him as a raccoon.
We know them very well here.
Yes, thank you. And listen, I got to qualify it. I'm not going to say where, but there was one state I was talking to and they didn't know what the hell a raccoon was. Apparently they don't come out in the desert. We love them. They go digging through our trash can. So we thought this would be a fun way to kind of pay homage to that origin of the cryo hop story, right? If you recall, cryo hops were literally a byproduct that were being discarded by the farmers. And we're quite proud in the fact that we were essentially able to reach into the trash and help turn it into treasure. So we thought that'd be a fun way to kind of pay homage to that story. And then little did we know, man, there's like a whole raccoon meme culture in the world. If you start Googling raccoons, you're going to have hours of entertainment. There's even a National Raccoon Day on October 1st that we didn't know about. When we launched this brand, we really we love this brand. It's one of our favorites. And Stash Panda, it added a little bit to what we call the zoo around here. We now have like a little raccoon critter that we're still trying to name. I'll have a name for it here in a week or so. But yeah, so we're just super pumped on this one. And Megan McKenna, our marketing director, did just a phenomenal job on all of our packaging. But I think especially on this one of my favorites.
It's a very good can. It was the first one that was eye-catching for sure.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into to the last of the four beers, the Cryo Stash.
Yes, the big boy.
The big boy, the Imperial IPA of the Stash family. Oh boy, this thing is this is a good beer, man. This is a beer that's unlike any other Imperial IPA that's on the market. And I've got a lot of different directions I go with this story, but let me start by saying that of the four beers that we're talking about today, really, I mean, if there's one that just really showcases the power of the cryo hops, the techniques that we're using with these cryo hops, Cryo Stash stands out to me. It's an Imperial IPA, 8.7% alcohol, and Imperial IPAs are a challenge for brewers to create. And that challenge often comes from the alcohol, the ABV. Alcohol in beer, as it gets over that 7.5% threshold, you can start tasting and feeling and smelling the alcohol in your beer. And so that's a challenge. And so what brewers typically do to combat that challenge is increase the bitterness, increase the IBUs. Because like I referenced before, bitterness will help cancel out and balance out sweetness in beer. And so high alcohol, high level of sweetness, this is why you typically see Imperial IPAs in that 75 to 100 plus IBU range. You need all those IBUs to help balance out the sweetness of the alcohol. So with Cryo Stash, you know, the power of cryo hops, the way that we're using these hops, we were able to get this beer at 8.7% alcohol while still keeping the IBUs at 40. And I'll tell you, it doesn't even drink close to 40 IBUs. We like to call this one a sessionable Imperial IPA. Literally an Imperial IPA that you can sit down and drink three or four of and not even know what the hell's going on after that, by the way.
Pretty dangerous.
Yeah. So a lot of bang for your buck with this one. So with that, we have some jokes. I'll throw in some of my jokes. So we always joke with Megan, our marketing director. We go, hey, man, maybe you should put a warning label on this one. You know that this beer is good for catching up. It's good for sitting down. But everything in between, you better be warned. That this is a couch inducer. It's definitely a couch inducer of a beer. In a couch inducer, this is when, you know, you get home after a long day's work and you go crack a couple beers, sit down on the couch, and then you stand up to go get another beer and you immediately have to sit back down again. That's a couch inducer. And Cryo Stash
that's
is
good.
Also, Megan chose blue for the color of the can here. I still give her shit for it. I say you should have made this camouflage because people just don't see it sneaking up on you.
This is good.
Yeah, so we have fun. You know, I've given, you know, Hazy IPA a lot of credit, right? They've definitely been kind of driving the bus and opening the door to new drinkers. But, you know, IPA continues to grow in the subcategories within IPA. And Imperial IPA is another one of those major players. It's like, it literally is like the hidden one that nobody thinks about, but it just grows every single year. Imperial IPA continues to grow. And even more so throughout COVID in 2020, when people weren't leaving their houses quite as often as they're used to, you know, they're buying a 12 pack and they want bang for their buck. They want value. They want that higher ABV. So Cryo Stash has had a really amazing breakout year for us. It brings a lot of value that, you know, we don't charge Imperial pricing for this beer. This is actually the same price point as the rest of our lineup. And obviously it's included in the Stash pack. So you get it at a better price, frankly. And then just the drinkability of it is unmatched. I mean, I personally have not had an Imperial IPA that drinks as smooth as this one. It literally drinks like an easygoing pale. And I think the timing again is perfect. There's a lot of big brands, a lot of West Coast brands, even they're kind of owning the category. You look at like the Elysian Space Dust of the world, the Voodoo Rangers, Imperial IPA is out there. But I just, give us the opportunity to go side by side as far as tasting or sampling goes. I think you're going to see a lot of customers coming back to this brand, those customers that want a very rewarding beer.
I would agree. That's a very good term. Very rewarding. Definitely get that out of all four that are offered. Again, here in the Hot Valley Cryo Hop Stash Pack, which is now available Missouri side, and the six pack of Bubble Stash standalone as well. Brandon, man, thank you so much for this entire time. There was a couple things I wanted to bring up, and I'm glad that you brought up towards the beginning here that you were a 90s kid, because the only reference that I had in my mind was we as 90s kids, man, really paved the way to make this happen. having Hot Valley in Kansas City is like a reverse Oregon trail.
Totally.
This, the only way it was going to get here was the path that we blazed way back in the day, dying of dysentery.
Yeah.
So it was good. I do one thing on the podcast, and even with this being a special recording, shouldn't really be any sort of exception.
Butter up.
Five heavy hitters.
Hey, butter, 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 butter.
All right. Well, if I have time, will depend on the questions.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah. The first one I'll ask, and I guess kind of sticking with the 90s kid reference theme, name or at least tell me one old person thing that you do.
I love it. This is just like hot ones, man. The hard hitting questions. Bro, I do so many old person things. How do I pick one? All right, I'll pick with the moment in my life that I realized I was now old balls. This is like 2 years ago, by the way, not that long ago. I love some meatloaf and Brussels sprouts together. Like the two things that I hated as a kid, I now love. And I remember eating that as my first time, like Brussels sprouts and meatloaf. And I was like, holy crap, this is amazing. I love this. Like, okay, I'm officially old as fuck right now. Yeah.
I'll join you in that, though, because that is delicious. Right. Question number two, and this is kind of more MacBoy in the beer category here, because a lot of this was obviously spent talking around the term cryo and cryo hops. Now that we're cryo hopping, what is the next thing that, for lack of a better term, we're going to cryo?
When you say cryo, you mean like freeze?
Yeah, and not counting like Walt Disney's head or something, you know?
You know, that's funny. We actually did an Instagram promo here maybe 5 or 6 months ago where it was an end of the year thing. And we go, all right, you've got a lot of bitter memories from 2020. Send us something that reminds you or that makes you bitter, that reminds you of 2020. And we'll cryogenically freeze it and drop it from the top of a building and shatter it into 1,000 pieces.
So we
really did that, yeah. But what's the next thing we're going to cryo? You know, fruit. Fruit could be an interesting thing. I don't know how that turns out.
Cryo fruit, okay.
Yeah.
Think it would come out like sweeter?
No, I don't know. I feel like it's probably similar to like flash freezing something. It's just a way to get something extremely cold extremely quickly. So it'd be a great way. I'll tell you what, we're going to need to cryogenically freeze Elon Musk's brain so that we can regenerate that thing in the future when we need to figure out how the hell to get away from Mars.
It'll still be a genius who acts like a child, you know. that'll be the best part. I like that. All right, question number three. If animals could talk, which one would be the most annoying?
The most annoying?
Yep.
So many options here. Well, that'd be a chihuahua, man. Not that I don't love chihuahuas. I feel like they'd just be talking all the time.
They kind of do that now, actually.
And just saying things you've already heard. You don't need to hear it again. I'm aware.
Somebody's out there.
I'm super worried. I just pissed off a whole like group of chihuahua loving demographic out there. I love the chihuahuas. I'm just saying they bark a lot. They got a lot to say.
There's going to have to be a Brandon Ross apology tour after this, but
I'll start preparing for it now. Yeah, I'll have to reach out.
I got number four. Number four is, what is the best thing you would reasonably expect to find in a cave?
Ooh, that's a good question. Reasonably expect, well, a bear, man. I think if you walk into a cave and you see a bear and you act surprised, you have no right for that reaction.
I didn't think about it that way. See, I was going more in the lines of like treasure, you know, because that's what my childhood led me to believe is in caves.
Well, listen, the bear is just the first character you have to fight off. And if you survive and get past the bear, then you can get to the treasure, which you now feel like you've actually earned. So you appreciate
it. The boss bear. Yeah.
Yeah. Boss bear.
I gotcha. Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
That might have just popped in my head. I just watched Grizzly Man recently. I highly recommend it. I love you,
bear. I mean, it's bear makes sense unless you're a billionaire who just lost his parents and then you find bats, but you know, that's I get it.
Dang, totally missed that opportunity. Yeah, I could have gone back.
That's all good. At the end we get treasure.
All right, that was a big question.
All right, last question. What outdated slang word do you still use?
All of them, man. Every single one of them. I say that's sick. It's tight.
To me, some of those aren't outdated, you know, but I guess they are.
It's because you and I are probably the same age, man. You ask the wrong person, they're like, what the hell are you talking about? I am
dope.
Oh, dope for sure. Oh, yeah. All those things. Yeah, I'm a full-blown dad. I have all the stereotypes that come with that. I've got the cheesy jokes, like the obvious jokes. Like, I don't know if I started like having this type of dad humor after Meatloaf or if this was before, but it all kind of came at once and I'm fully guilty of it and I can't even control it. Like, and the fact that people call me out on it just makes me enjoy it even more. It's like classic dad stuff. So I'm all about using outdated terms. Not being like part of being a cool dad is how I explain it. Apparently I'm not.
That's awesome.
My daughter, no problem. But yeah. One day she'll appreciate it.
Well, man, Brandon Ross of Hot Valley Brewing Company, thank you so very much for your time. I appreciate it, even from the technical snafus to this moment and going through these questions. We are thrilled to have Hot Valley in Kansas City finally available. Like we were talking about, look for the variety pack and the standalone six-pack of Bubble Stash on shelves now. And, man, next time you're in the area, come on by. We got some beer.
Can't wait, man. Yeah, I got to say, with COVID, you know, the world's been different and doing these mobile calls has been a lot of fun, but we can't wait. The whole team, I speak for the whole team when I say we can't wait to get out there and hit the streets and go talk about the brand side by side with you folks and sell beer.
Sure.
Basement. We'll jump at the opportunity and can't wait to meet you in person, by the way, and have a beer together as well.
Yeah, these things go way better with beer in hand.
Yep, I've been on that part in my end. It's just better when you're not drinking alone.
That's true. Yeah. Brandon, thank you very, very much, man.
All right, Aaron. Hey, it's been emotional, man. Have a great rest of the day and enjoy your weekend.